I'm doing great. How are you?
Ralph, I'm great. Great to visit with you. Thanks for making time. Let me ask you, you were there for day one of the Geno Smith era. How would you describe the vibe around the Giants facility today?
Well, you know, it seems a little down. I think everybody's quiet and cautious. You know, anytime you make a switch like this, especially a high-profile one, no one really knows how to act because, you know, it's not Geno Smith's fault. So his teammates, his coaches want to be excited for him and support him. But they're all very respectful of Eli Manning and what they know he's going through right now. So, you know, I think overall it's the ending of an era. It's kind of a somber day around the building. It's not like they're, you know, when Eli first got his start, it was the excitement of things to come. This is more about the sadness of things ending.
All right, so when that went down yesterday and you first heard about that, what was your initial reaction when you heard the news that the team was going to start Geno Smith instead of Eli Manning?
I was blown away on several fronts from the fact that they've made this decision now after, you know, they maybe hinted at it at times. We've asked multiple times, are you going to play Davis Webb? You know, I think Ben McAdoo at one point said, I don't see a situation where we'll do that. It just came so suddenly. They did it with a press release. And that they turned to Geno Smith was even more mind-boggling because I can't find anybody in the Giants organization who says Geno Smith is the future at quarterback here. So if you're going to do this and do this to Eli Manning, why wouldn't you just turn to Davis Webb, who might be their quarterback of the future? It's a kind of a hard part of this move to understand.
Yeah, I mean, so Ralph, so what is the answer to that question? If you want to get a look at Davis Webb, that's one thing. Why not get a look at Davis Webb? Why are they turning to Geno Smith right now instead of Webb?
Yeah, there's an answer to that question, and it's not a good one. They will turn to Davis Webb at some point. This move is absolutely about seeing Davis Webb, but the coaches don't feel like he's ready right now. They think it would be kind of unfair to throw him on one week of increased reps into a game in Oakland, a difficult place to play. So they want Geno Smith to at least get this week, maybe even next week, or at least part of it, to give Davis Webb some time to work his way up. Of course, the follow-up question to that is, if Davis Webb isn't ready, why not let Eli Manning just start for the next week or so? And then, why isn't Davis Webb ready? This is not a surprise that the Giants' season is basically over. Why didn't a month ago the coaches start to say, you know what, let's start giving Davis Webb some increased practice time just in case? Those questions haven't been answered yet.
Ralph, you're good. You asked my three follow-up questions for me. I like that. Nice job. Ralph Vacchiano joining us. He's the author of Eli Manning, The Making of a Quarterback. It's available in paperback right now. I mean, Ralph, the team has suffered an incredible number of injuries, especially to the receiving core. So how much of this 2-9 record is on Eli Manning? How much of this season is Eli Manning's fault?
You know, he gets some of the blame, and I think there's a percentage of it that always has to fall on the quarterback no matter what, because, and he would admit this, he's a franchise quarterback. It's his job to make the players around him better, and you know, I don't know that that's been the case for much of this season. On the other hand, you can't ignore the fact that the players around him are just not good. This offensive line has been a disaster for multiple seasons. Yes, a more mobile quarterback might be better behind an offensive line like this, but the Giants knew what Eli Manning was. So, you know, why they would not address that and give him more of a pocket is beyond me. You know, you take the best two receivers, or three receivers really, away from any quarterback, and things would fall apart. They lose Odell Beckham, one of the best weapons in the league, Brandon Marshall, who was supposed to be their number two, and even Sterling Shepard, who's been a real good player for the Giants the last 2 years, hasn't played much. So he doesn't have a lot of help. He could have done more, but it's almost unfair to even say that because this is just a bad team, especially when the injury started to hit.
You know, when you look back at some of the things that Ben McAdoo has said about Eli over the past year, should we not have all seen this coming? And then how would you describe the relationship between McAdoo and Manning?
Well, there's no question we should have seen this coming. And I think to an extent we probably did. We've had a lot of stories and a lot of talk in New York about, you know, is there a fractured relationship between the two? Ben McAdoo always insisted no. Eli Manning always insisted no. But, you know, Ben McAdoo has been very critical. And starting at the combine last year, when we asked him about the offensive line, rather than rip his offensive line or criticize them, he talked about how Eli Manning needed to be quicker on his feet and get used to playing behind a pocket that would crumble. You know, he had the famous thing where the Giants lost the game partially because of a delay of game penalty. Ben McAdoo blamed that sloppy quarterback play. He's taken shots at Eli mildly before, but what's notable is he rarely takes shots at other players. So clearly, he had been hinting all along that, maybe he wanted a more mobile quarterback. Maybe he'd be looking in a different direction. And people around Eli Manning always kind of hinted that maybe the relationship wasn't great. But Ben McAdoo and Eli Manning always insisted, and even still insist, that that wasn't the case. It's just the evidence certainly supports that maybe they weren't always on the same page.
Ralph Facciano joining us for a few more moments. I mean, you could see how busted up Eli was when he discussed it yesterday. You've known him since 2004. You have covered him for everything. In fact, you literally wrote the book on him, Eli Manning, The Making of a Quarterback. So what do you make of how he's handled all of this?
Typical class. Really, the fact that he showed some emotion yesterday, it's always surprising. The only other two times I can remember that happening were, at Tom Coughlin's farewell press conference, and there was a game his rookie year where he was benched in the third or fourth start against the Baltimore Ravens. He was a disaster. He nearly broke down talking about how he let his teammates down. Other than that, you rarely see any kind of human emotion side of Eli like that. And I think he let his guard down a little bit. But he's, from what everybody around him tells me, he's blown away by this. He's not happy about it. He thinks it could have been handled better. But you watch his press conference, you would never get that even hint from him. He just handles it with class. He takes it in stride. And quite honestly, from everything I've heard from people in the building today, he was back at work this morning focusing on helping Davis Webb and Geno Smith get ready. And I got to tell you, I don't know that I would have handled it as well as he did, because I'd be pretty angry right now.
So, Ralph, where do you think that leaves him? I mean, on the one hand, he's always said that he wanted to play his entire career with one team, especially that team. And then on the other hand, he's got nothing to prove, right? But maybe he does now after all this. So if you had to guess, has he played his last game with the Giants? And if he has, where do you think he might end up? Would he keep playing or maybe just retire?
I don't get the sense at all that he wants to retire. He's said before he wants to keep playing, especially because he's healthy. Everybody I know around him says he wants to keep playing. He obviously would prefer to play with the Giants, but I don't think he has any interest in coming back and having to fight for his job, or just being a backup and a mentor to Davis Webb or somebody they might draft. I think in the offseason, he's going to explore his options, whether that's asking the Giants to release him or waiving his no-trade clause. Everything's a little raw right now, and nobody really knows what he's going to do, but I think most people who know him suspect that that will be the case. And people that know him also know he understands the realities of the NFL. There are a couple of teams who you could make an argument would be a real contender with better quarterback play. He knows the Denver Broncos, where his brother played out his career, are in that situation. He absolutely knows Tom Coughlin's Jacksonville Jaguars are in that situation. So if he can engineer an opportunity to go there rather than just stand on the sidelines with the Giants, I think he'd be willing to do that. I think he feels like he has two or three good years left.
All right, so finally, where does that leave Ben McAdoo for next year and even GM Jerry Reese?
Well, the assumption all along had been that they're going to both be out of a job. I can't imagine the Giants' season is going to get better with Geno Smith or Davis Webb running the show. So, you're still looking at a two- or three-win type of season, and it's going to be hard for John Mara to stand up at the end of the season and say, this was a disaster, but I'm bringing everybody back. So I do think both of them will be out of a job. It's going to be an interesting question, though, for John Mara and Steve Tisch. You just let two guys make this monumental decision for this franchise about the future of the franchise, even though they may not be part of the future, which is one of the great unanswered questions here. But, it's hard right now to see any way that Reese or McAdoo will be back with this team next season.
So quick follow-up then. If they don't come back and they bring in a coach that really likes Eli Manning, is there any way this thing could swing back and Manning might be open to staying for the right coach?
Oh, absolutely. I think Manning's ideal situation would be to stay. I don't know that after this he necessarily wants to play for Ben McAdoo. There might be some friction there. But if a new coach comes in and says to him, you're my guy, I think this would be Eli Manning's number one choice. I think he would even like the idea of a redemption story to try to win back the fans and everybody with a winning season. I just think he won't come back or won't want to come back if the circumstance is you're our backup, or you've got to go battle for this job. He's going to have to be told you're the man.
No doubt. Ralph Facciano is an NFL insider for SNY, SNY.tv, and the author of Eli Manning, The Making of a Quarterback, which again is available in paperback. Ralph, nice job. Great to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim. My pleasure.
Great talking to you. All right, so he laid that out for you. Where do you come out on the way this was handled? Number one, did they do the right thing by benching him? And I don't think any of us would disagree. The next person that I see who says, oh, they handled that the right way, that's the way you handle something like that, would be the first person. So I'm not even necessarily opposed to them having to get a look at Davis Webb. But if you're going to do it the right way. Notice there's something else that he slipped in that I had not referenced yet. They announced it in a press release. This is Eli freaking Manning. He won you two Super Bowls. MVPs of the Super Bowls. One of the all-time great players for that franchise. In fact, after he won that second Super Bowl, ownership said he's probably the best player we've ever had here. So that's how you treat your best player ever. You not only bench him unceremoniously, but you bench him for Geno Smith because you want to evaluate Geno Smith. That's like benching salt to evaluate salt.
Bench the salt.
We know salt sucks for you, and we know Geno's not good at football. You don't need to evaluate either one of those things. Hey, Alvin, I'm so glad that Bench the Salt made the trip with us to the new studio. That tells me that everything did. Bench the salt.
Bench the salt.
You know what's weak? You want to know what's really weak? High blood pressure.
High blood pressure is weak.
Really weak. I'm in a brand new studio, and I'm getting a lot of good reaction. I appreciate you, clones. This says, hi, Jim. Congratulations on moving into your new crib. Been pretty much a daily listener for a few decades now. Not sure if it's me or the new studio, but man, you sound rich and clear today. Did you guys get an equipment upgrade as well? I did not on my end, which is why I felt the need to provide some feedback. Albeit not sports related or clone bashing, but damn dog, you sound awesome. You might even say mellifluous. Thanks for all you do, pimp. Crowley and Buffalo, home of the crappiest sports teams in the nation. I'm going to answer it this way. We brought some of the same equipment. We have some new equipment. And without question, I got an upgrade myself. You can't sit in the studio that I'm sitting in right now and not be hyped and not be pumped and not be energetic. I mean, generally, I try to be every single day anyway, but these are new digs now, and it's great. So I think it's all the above. You got an upgrade in equipment. You've got an upgrade in my energy even because of the upgrade in equipment. Just all feels good, and it looks amazing. And when I can get this thing, you know what it's like when you move into a new house and you got to kind of walk around and put stickers on things that aren't quite right or aren't quite finished? We've got a little bit of that. Otherwise, I would have already scoped this thing for you. I would have given you a tour of the new digs. It would have been like Cribs. Like, and here's where the magic happens. Hey, look inside my refrigerator. You want to see inside my refrigerator? I should show you the inside of my refrigerator in my office. My 4-inch refrigerator with a Quest bar and a bottle of water and a slimy banana. Now, I'm not going to let you in there, but I can show you where the magic happens. We're just not quite ready yet. Soon. Romy, been listening for as long as I can remember. We all know that change sucks. Even if it's an upgrade, way to not miss a damn beat thus far. Smooth like butter, baby. Best of luck with the next chapter. Aaron in Maine. Aaron, thanks so much. If you're impressed, you would have been really impressed if you saw everybody grinding out last night until the wee hours of the morning making adjustments. XR4TI was here till about 11, and the engineers and the guys building this studio well after midnight. So that makes it even better. If you knew what was going down last night, you'd be even more impressed right now. All right, so I've got an hour right now of open phones. Where do you want to go with it? 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Dana White's coming up in hour number three. LeBron James ejected for the first time of his career. I want to get that to you. Also, podcast Tuesday has morphed into Wednesday. I've got a recap of the podcast if you haven't heard it yet. Arizona State's looking at Herm Edwards. Blake Griffin with a sprain, not a tear. And we'll talk about what that means to the Clips.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Real talk. Real talk, I'm having the time of my life. Man, I'm having so much fun. Got a brand new studio. Got a trip to New York this weekend for the NFL on CBS. We've got a radio show, which is going to turn into a TV show on January 2nd. There's so many good things going on right now. And I want to get into this a little bit later on. It's at a time when the business that I'm in has never been more challenging, has never been tougher. There are really, really, really good people that are having to pack their boxes. So to me, this is an amazing opportunity that I do not look at lightly. Where they're putting boards up on windows and shutting down other shops, we are expanding. And it's an amazing opportunity, and we're going to crush it. I'm going to get after it. 1-800-636-8686. Let me change up and talk some basketball for a minute. November 28th is a day that I think we're all going to remember. It's a day that's going to live on in sports history. And not only because it was the day that the Giants announced that Eli Manning's starting streak would end, but also it's the day that LeBron's ejection streak ended. Eli will not be starting an NFL game for the first time since 2004. And last night, LeBron was ejected from an NBA game for the first time since, well, ever. The Cavs were blowing out the Heat. LeBron was in the middle of a double-double. So let's skip to 1:59 remaining in the third quarter.
LeBron now the other way, takes it to the top of the key, hesitates down the left alley, drew contact. Oh, my goodness. Nothing called. LeBron is going to get a technical. Did. Now he got thrown out. Wow, he got a double technical. Kane Fitzgerald just threw LeBron out of the game with 1:59 remaining in the third quarter. LeBron went right at Fitzgerald. I'm not sure I've ever seen that. I mean, LeBron didn't make contact. He went at him. I mean, certainly he deserved one technical.
Oh, my goodness.
But he was just given a double technical for basically one exchange. I mean, he went right at Kane Fitzgerald, made a gesture at him. He did throw his arm at him. I mean, there was a ton of contact. But, I mean, a double technical and LeBron's gone.
That's Cavs Radio. So let the record book show that it was Kane Fitzgerald who administered LeBron's first ejection. And again, if we know Kane Fitzgerald's name, that's not a good thing. If you know the name of any referee, it's generally not a good thing. So Kane Fitzgerald is the one who administers LeBron's first ever NBA ejection. And it was pretty shocking. Because again, like the announcer said, it's not like he flew off into some rage. It's not like he made contact with an official. Other than giving off a, you know who the hell I am, vibe, he really didn't seem to do much of anything at all. Except there's a T, here's another, now you're gone, thanks for coming. The first ejection ever for LeBron, and it happened in the middle of a 23-point blowout. I mean, weird. Really weird. Now, of course, there are always two sides to every single story, and LeBron's side is, after he got a steal, he went up the court, and he was fouled as he missed that layup.
You know, that particular play, I got fouled all the way up the court, you know, from the time that I stripped him all the way till I got to the rim. And, you know, so that's what it was about. And I said what I had to say, and I moved on, but he decided I should get two of them, you know. So it is what it is. We got the win, and that's what's most important.
Nothing more tired than stars crying about calls they don't get and then saying it is what it is. Except LeBron's got a point. He does have a point. While he took 11 shots in the paint last night, he only went to the line once, and that was 30 seconds into the game. And there's no way you can tell me that on the other 10 shots in the paint that nobody in a Heat jersey made contact with him. It's just not physically possible. And he is averaging a career low free throws despite doing the bulk of his work in the lane, so I understand his frustration. But there are two sides to every story. As for the ref, Fitzgerald's story is, quote, "It was a culmination of a couple of different acts. Immediately after the no-call, he turned and he threw an air punch directly at me. Then he aggressively charged at me. Then he used vulgarity in my ear a few times." End of quote. So, what it is a case of he said. Now, wait a minute. It's not just a case of that. Because now we've got a third dude in. And that third man in is Enes Kanter. No, the Knicks had absolutely nothing to do with last night's Cavs Heat game, but that didn't stop Kanter from sprinting into the cage and getting in on the fight. He jumped on Twitter with a pic of LeBron and the ref. He circled the ref and had the caption, "King of Cleveland, hashtag his favorite playground, Hashtag strive for greatness.
Strive for greatness out here, cuz.
I mean, that's classic Cantor. That's a guy who's just itching for a reason to go, either in person or online. And he did, dropping a strong callback to LeBron's Instagram post after Cleveland's comeback win at the Garden a few weeks back. So what about LeBron? What's he going to do with that? LeBron's reaction to Cantor's tweet was a shrug and a remark that Cantor's, quote, always looking for attention. Yeah, that and LeBron's smart enough not to give it to him. He's not getting hooked by a guy who is of no threat to him and means nothing to him, no matter how funny the guy is. And this is part of the problem, right? Cantor is going to have to start winning some of these matchups on the court, or else LeBron's going to keep doing that. He's going to keep shrugging the whole thing off. It's not a good rivalry until the Knicks were actually in the same league as the Cavs, and then it'll be great. Don't get me wrong. I love the hustle from Cantor to go right to his phone and get online with that blast as quickly as he possibly could, especially considering who he's taking a shot at. I love that. I just hate the fact that they're not going to face each other on the court until April 8th. That part's terrible. I need these guys to play tonight, and then tomorrow, and then the night after that, and the night after that. So if they can't, I guess we just need Cantor to keep tweeting and chirping LeBron nonstop until April. And knowing this guy, he probably will. He probably will. How about LeBron getting tossed last night? Did he get what he had coming to him, or was that an overreaction? And if we know the referee's name, is that not the answer in and of itself? What's up, Austin? That's Austin walking into the studio. It's a long walk, bros. It's a long-ass walk, isn't it? We got a lot of real estate now. Rome, did you say LeBron got ejected for the first time? I'll never forget my first time. Yours, Goose in the H2O. You mean when Goose got ejected and smashed his head in the cockpit and died? Dan in Louisville. It's a big Top Gun house, you know that. Now, I will tell you, I did watch Top Gun the other night. I mean, who doesn't stop on Top Gun? And here's where we have a disagreement. This is where our sensibilities are not the same. There are parts of the crew, no names mentioned, Keith Arnold, who think that the movie holds up. I was just, this is classic. He couldn't wait to let me know, oh, it holds up. When my take was going to be, dude, that movie does not hold up. Even my wife, even Janet, was like, wow. This movie does not hold up.
That's right.
Janet said to me, why is it that when we saw that movie in theaters, it was so amazing, and now it's that? Broham, that movie does not hold up, and you know I love it. At all. Goose is dead, man. Dan in Louisville. What about that movie holds up? Name one thing about that movie that holds up.
That's right.
There's nothing that holds up. That volleyball scene, that was the one thing that didn't even make sense at that time. Dudes are all out there glistening in sweat, flexing on each other, playing beach volleyball. Not only did that not hold up, that made no sense then. Volleyball, dudes glistening in sweat and playing volleyball in jeans, flexing at each other. That holds up? How about guys piloting fighter jets slamming shots the night before? Isn't there some 24-hour rule even for commercial pilots?
Okay, man, let's turn and burn.
All right, we're going to break. 1-800-636-8686. Come on, I need some phone calls so I can practice on my new caller software. We are live in a new studio. As soon as I get this place cleaned up, I'll let you inside. Soon enough, you're going to be inside of everything. The TV show is going to be the radio show, Simulcast, come January 2nd. So between now and then, we're going to hammer out the kinks, do a few rehearsals, get this thing done. In the meantime, you want to make sure you have CBS Sports Network. Make sure you have that with your provider so you can watch the show live and see exactly how it looks. When we come back, open phones. Dana White's not until hour number 3. In the meantime, I owe you a sports update. Here is the very latest for you on this Wednesday.
Live from Southern California, This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Jim Rome with you on this Wednesday. Hey, why pay more for annual protection motor oil when you can get Castrol Edge? Extended performance for less. It goes 15,000 miles between oil changes. Titanium strong Castrol Edge. More than just an oil. It is liquid engineering. On Twitter, at JoelHarm73 tweets, okay, Alvin, you are the best. Did you hear that subtle playing with the boys drop? Wow. Blew my mind with that. Hashtag Alvin is great. Hashtag Hawk sucks. What's subtle about that? What's subtle with him mixing in playing with the boys? I also read that because of the hashtag Hawk sucks. Maybe. Probably. However, before you say that and before you accept that, you need to listen to Hawk on the podcast. He and I sit down for a Q&A. Speaking of the podcast, now I told you on Monday this was going to be an insane week because in the middle of moving out of a spot where we had been for a decade plus, you know, I still have to work my way through and crush that daily grind. It doesn't matter that 15 U-Hauls backed up to my studio door yesterday, ripped out all of our gear, and took my chair with them. I am still loaded on takes, still deep as hell on guest prep, and I still dropped another weekly installment of the Jim Rome podcast. And on this week's episode, episode number 15, I wrapped with Houston Rockets GM Daryl Morey. This dude's been called the Billy Bean of basketball, the unconventional, analytically driven executive who is writing the book on how to flip the NBA on its dome. And it's working. No, he doesn't have an NBA championship yet. But if you check the standings right now, the Rockets are pacing the same conference that Golden State plays in. And in a league that has been dominated by two teams for the past 3 years, Morey is exhausting every resource that he has to bring a title back to H-Town. Speaking of those Warriors, nobody knows better than Daryl Morey just how historically great they are. In fact, I asked him straight up, settle the debate once and for all. Who wins a seven-gamer between Golden State and the 95-96 Bulls, who are generally regarded as the best team of all time? Does Golden State beat the 95-96 Bulls, which won 72 games?
I don't think it would be particularly close, honestly. To be fair, those teams, somewhat you're playing under different rules in terms of the legal defense rules and things like that. But if you take the current set of rules and the current team and you take the in-prime teams from the 90s, 80s, there's no doubt in my mind Golden State beats them in five or six. It would not go seven.
There's your hot take. Not only would they win, it wouldn't go seven. In fact, it might not go six. He said they'd win in five or six. So pretty strong to not only say that Golden State would win, but that they wouldn't even need seven games. And that's not some Golden State fanboy or honk saying that. That's one of their biggest competitors. So it goes to show not only what one of the bright minds in basketball thinks about the Warriors, but also the work that he has cut out for him to try to take them down. Also, did something a little bit different. You know, the podcast continues to evolve and change. When we first started, I started with two guests, and I've tried to dial it back to a single guest, which I think works better. I like that. I like that one strong single guest. But I also want to give you things that we don't have ordinarily, and I want to do something different. So I went off the board, and I brought in the Sparrow to catch up with the kid after he just banked a year in the jungle. Now, I know you all want to get behind the curtain. I know you all don't want to wait until January 2nd to get behind the curtain. You want to know what's going on the inside. So we got into it. We talked about, among other things, what it's like to screen calls for this show, what it's like to interact directly with the clones, what his best day in the jungle was, and what the worst part about EPing this show is. What's the worst part of this gig? What's the toughest part and the worst part?
Yeah, hands down.
Let's keep it negative for a minute.
Yeah, sure. Hands down, Twitter's been the worst part. I came in with like 27 followers, and once I put at Jim Rome's producer in my bio, it went to like 2,500 in a couple months. And people expect, since
I work... because you're good or sharp or insightful,
no,
right?
No, I suck at Twitter. And now when I suck at Twitter, people are all over me for it. So, you know, people think because I'm associated with you that I have got like fire takes and like I'm super smart when it comes to sports and I know exactly what to say at the right time the way you do when you're watching a game. I would much rather
tweet. Bro, you're none of the above.
None of the above. I would much rather tweet about Hot Pockets or cats because that's funny to me, except every time I do it now, I sit there for like 45 minutes thinking about it.
But it's not funny to anybody else, bro.
I know, but I got to be me unapologetically. And the thing is, Jim, I sit over tweets for like 30 minutes now just like looking for typos, looking for grammar errors because your audience is so amazing at being on top of everything. They don't let you get away with anything. And like I could tweet – the sky is blue. And they'd be like, fire takes, Sparrow. We'll see you in the studio tomorrow, you stupid idiot.
See, a lot of that. Now, you might hear that and say, I got to give this guy a little more credit. In fact, a number of people who had already heard the podcast were tweeting, you know what, Sparrow? I'm trying to hate you, but I got to admit, I'm starting to like you. Or I didn't know that side of you. So that's another reason why you want to check it out. And in addition to Daryl Morey and the Sparrow, of course, there was another batch of the voicemails that made it on through, and here is a small taste of the tape that I played back in this week's episode.
First new message.
This is Dave in Denver. I'm a huge Ohio State fan, and Jim Harbaugh is going to have to change his name to Jim Harbitch. He's overpaid, he's overrated, he's overmatched in the Big Ten.
Message saved. Next message.
Hey, what's up, Romy? I know it's, walking the thin line of blasphemy to rip the Packers and their fat fans. It's going to be a tough and sad Thanksgiving for those fat, nasty Packer fans. Let's go!
Message deleted. Next message.
That was a very valiant effort, Packers, for y'all to go into Pittsburgh and nearly knock them off and not get blown out. Y'all picked off Rottenberger 2 times and y'all damn near beat them. To any morons who don't vote for Baker Mayfield for the Heisman Trophy, y'all stupid idiots. So what? He grabbed his junk.
Message saved.
I don't know. I think I've heard that voice before. And Sidney Crosby's got a luscious ass. You forgot that part. So look for episode 15. It's already up on iTunes and many different Android podcast players right now. Look for it. It's there. One email, then back to the phones. Dear Mr. Rome, thank you for your business. Hope your move went well. We are reaching out because you left a voicemail machine with a trash sticker on it, and we want to make sure that you truly meant to mark this as trash. We think it is golden. Signed, Your Movers. John in Huntington Beach. Wore the movers, taking my old, crumpled up emails from your old studio and framing them. No, John, that stuff's trash, and so are you. Come on, John. Nobody's digging your crap out of the garbage, John.
Garbage!
Let's go to the phones. All right, so just so you know what's going on here, I've got a couple of different ways to take phone calls. I can use my really spiffy, brand-new software for screening phone calls off my computer, but I noticed there was a bit of a lag, so now I'm going to go old school. Because I've got a new studio, I've got 2 different ways to bring up the calls. Let's try it this way. We go to Kansas. Earl. Earl, good to have you on. What's
Romy
up? How are you?
Pimping the box, man. I woke this morning and I heard an NFL quarterback got benched, and I thought, my gosh, in Chiefs Kingdom now, we're out of quarterback purgatory. That finally somebody came in and helped our ailing Alex suffering from his post-traumatic sack syndrome. And it's going to give us a little relief here. But, oh, man, it wasn't him. Somehow, someone else saw the play of a quarterback and set him down. And we are still left with, and the part of Top Gun that holds up is Chiefs fans, our heads feel like gooses going into the canopy, banging on the glass, banging on the glass. Man, I tell you what, Andy Reid, I've got to know, when you stand at that podium and say, I never thought about switching quarterback, somebody's got to ask him, Andy, what would he have to do to make you think about changing it? Come on, Andy, we're suffering here. You look, when you choose not to decide, you have made a choice. And in Andy and Alex's case, you chose to throw picks and get sacked. We need a rebel and a runner. We need a signal turning green. We need the new world Patrick Mahone. We've got to get this man in here before the season is over. Andy, come on, wake up. All those Chiefs fans in the kingdom, we're mad as hell, and we don't want to take it anymore.
All right, Earl, I'm jumping in on you. Go ahead and rack the phone call. He made it real clear. I like it. Nice job. And when you hit the call box a second time, then the call is gone. That worked. Kind of like that. Alvy, save that call, rack that call. So he says, I woke and heard that an NFL quarterback got benched, and I thought, good, it's Alex Smith. Except that's not what happened. And you know that's not what happened. You should know better, Earl. Andy Reid made it very clear earlier in this week. He's not making a quarterback change right now. He made that really clear. Eli Manning is the one who got benched. And again, if you're joining us late, we've been talking about this for most of the morning. It's one thing to bench Eli Manning. But if you're the New York Giants and you're a franchise that is known for doing the right thing almost every single time, how do you butcher that badly? Eli Manning's not having a great year, but he's not having a horrible year either. And believe me, the fact that they're 2-9 is not his fault. Not saying that he's without blame because some of it's on him, but a lot of it's not. The fact that he's got an offensive line that's busted up and porous. The fact that he lost a couple of his best wide receivers. I mean, who would do any better than this guy is given the circumstances? But if you want to find out what you have in Davis Webb, then go ahead and handle that the right way. Set it up the right way. Treat Eli Manning for what he is. One of the most iconic players in franchise history. You don't do this guy like that. You don't do this guy dirty like that. Announced in a press release. And not only that, remember, he was not benched for Davis Webb. Maybe ultimately they're setting this up for Webb, but that's not what Ben McAdoo said. McAdoo said that they want to see what they have in their other two quarterbacks. And they're starting with Geno Smith. Geno Smith is going to get the next opportunity. Because they want to see what they have in him. They need to take a look at Geno Smith. Why? Why does anybody need to take a look at Geno Smith? You know what you have in that guy, and you know what you don't have in that guy. So they couldn't have held this worse, and it couldn't be any more insulting. So I wonder where that leaves Eli Manning. Manning has said he wanted to spend his entire career with one team, the New York Giants. So seeing what happened to Peyton Manning and seeing how it could not have been easy for Manning to leave Indianapolis to go to Denver, you wonder if Eli wants to go through with something like that. But then again, if I'm Eli and I'm 36 and I feel good physically and they just jam me and buried a knife in my back, I might not have had anything to prove before, but now I do. If I'm Eli Manning, I'm looking around and I want to see what kind of opportunities are out there. I wouldn't play just to play if I'm not afforded an opportunity where I could win, but there's no way I'd go out like that. We'll see. Coming up in hour number 3, I've got Dana White, but that's not until 20 past, meaning the top of the hour is wide open. Hit me up right now, 1-800-636-8686. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. This is CBS Sports Radio.